I'm Kurt Benkert, and this is Pocket Presence, powered by Sleeper. Welcome back to another episode of Pocket Presence, where we guide you through this amazing season. And we're starting in week one of preseason, just wrapping up. We've got a lot of things to talk about. I had so much fun watching preseason football this week, and part of it was because I won money. Yes, I'm participating in preseason festival activities. But two, we got to see a lot of guys that we've been talking about for months, finally in live action in the NFL, not on their college film, in real life NFL film. And it was so great to see them play on normal NFL hashes, not these wide college hashes. Tyler, how was your preseason week one experience?
I mean, all you're looking for as a fan, especially of a team like the Packers who are looking to make a deep run, are for little flashes of confirmation of the excitement that you've held all offseason. Yeah. And the Packers come out and do that on the very first drive, and they just get you. I turned off the game after that. I watched the USA win gold in basketball because I saw all I needed to see in that moment. And that's all you're looking for in the preseason. You're hoping for no injuries, and you're looking for little flashes like that.
Dude, it was so cool because it was like this reminder of, oh shit, that's how the season ended last year. And the Packers came out striking, like fast, physical. They were violent on defense. Like, not to mention, I know it's preseason. I know that the Browns didn't have all their starters and whatnot, but the style of play that the defense embodied across the board, and again, Packers defense didn't have all their starters, you can see the attacking mindset and turnover creating mindset for that defense all the way down to the backups. And if you don't think that the starters are going to embody a version of that, that's even probably more aggressive, I think you're out of your mind. That defense should have people more excited even than the offense, not to mention our guy Carlson kicking field goals, making field goals. I mean, there was so much to be excited for as Packers fans this year, and it all kind of came to fruition in that first preseason game. And I think one of the big things in this offseason is, look, how much of last year was a fluke? Because you talk about how young guys were. You talk about the plays they made. Like, there were some really low percentage plays that were made last year, and it seems like they're not so low percentage after all. Got dogs all across the field. Jordan Love's going to be slinging. Looked real comfortable back there in his two passes. And he got his first stop to toss it downfield, and he throws a dime to Wicks and it's a touchdown. So it's just cool to see them pick up where they left off. And now it's like, okay, how can you build on this? Because last year, if we all remember, they started terrible in the first 8 weeks. So if you take away that 8 weeks of figuring out their identity, knocking off rust, if there's no rust, the NFC North might be their division to take this year. So I don't know. I'm excited for them.
And they're going to need it. You mentioned that this division could be like Game of Thrones. I mean, it's going to be a bloodbath, the NFC North. And you hope that as maybe the Vikings have to figure it out with J.J. McCarthy or Sam Darnold, whoever starts week one, as the Bears have to figure it out with Caleb Williams, that the Packers don't have to figure it out and can just start hot and maybe build up a bit of a lead as the end of the season approaches. And you assume some of these teams are just going to get better as the season goes on.
They are, man. And you know, like, the way that I'm looking at this NFC North, and people might call me crazy, I think the Packers are going to win the division. That's not a homer prediction. I think that they're the best team right now in that division, and I think their defense is going to be an asset. Their offense is explosive, and they have a lot of young talent. I think the Bears are going to be the second best in the division. I think it's going to be the Bears and the Packers fighting for that first spot. The Bears could take it, though. Like, I would not rule out the Bears. I think the Lions are going to be the third in the division, but I think the Lions are still going to be a playoff team. I think all these teams, all three of them are going to make the playoffs this year. I don't think any of them are going to miss. Again, NFL now, we have an extra playoff spot, so there can be multiple wild cards. There were three teams from the AFC North last year, so it's not like that's a normal thing that can happen now. I think the NFC North has three teams that can really take it the distance. And again, this is not a knock on the Lions. I just think this is a quarterback-driven league, and you need to have a quarterback that can move around a little bit. And I think Jared Goff's ceiling, he needs a lot of good things around him going well because he can't create with his feet. So I'm going to just go with my gut here and say this is going to be the Packers and Bears fighting for the one spot in the NFC North, with the Lions going to the playoffs in the wild card. But man, we got a lot of exciting football to talk about. Sorry, Vikings fans. It's just, it is what it is.
I think they understand it. I hope they've come to terms with it. When you have a QB battle between Sam Darnold and J.J. McCarthy, who did look good, and we'll talk about that here in a second.
Yeah,
I think you accept that there's going to be a year of growth. So let's get into that. We saw these rookie quarterbacks, like you said, finally on an NFL field. We had appearances from Caleb Williams, J.J. McCarthy, Jaden Daniels, little Joe Milton over Drake May controversy. pick your quarterback where you want to start. You're very complimentary of a lot of them, Bo Nix included. I didn't even throw him in there.
Yeah.
Which guy do you want to start with? Let's talk about each of them.
Yeah. So I want to talk first with Caleb Williams. So Caleb Williams came out slinging, and he came out doing things that made him special in college while also establishing the baseline of like things that he could not miss in the NFL. He was hitting throws accurately. He was in rhythm. He was on time. Like those things were not always something that he was doing in college. He was very often in college looking for the big play. The big plays found Caleb Williams in this preseason game, but he also hit his routine plays in rhythm on quick game, ball placement. Like Caleb Williams is going to be a problem. And it looks like he's had tremendous growth from the time that he was in college to this very first week. And hey, shout out to the Bears coaching staff, right? Like they had to get him ready. They had to get him prepared to where he wasn't having too much put on his plate. And Caleb Williams looks like he's ready to play. And once he gets all of his guys playing with him, and that defense is going to be nasty this year, like the Bears are going to be a problem for people. And like we said earlier, the fact that the Bears, having not been the worst team in the NFL last year, they were what, 7-10? Mm-hmm. They were this close. The fact that they got the number one overall pick, like that doesn't happen ever. So that's just things falling in line. Shout out to the Panthers for completely blowing that. But the Bears and Caleb Williams have a really, really bright future. Turning the needle over a little bit, I want to talk about Jaden Daniels. So Jaden Daniels didn't play a whole lot, but what we did see from him was exciting. He was accurate. He was able to extend plays. He was able to make plays with his feet, push the ball downfield super accurately on that go ball that he had down the right sideline. It was nuts. Like that was such a cool throw and a really good catch. And you also could see how comfortable he was. He didn't look like this frail guy sitting back there, like nervous about anything like people alleged him to be. He looked in command and control, knew where he was going with the football. He was accurate. Like the Commanders could also be a problem this year. I don't know why people are so quick to dismiss the Commanders. They got better coaching staff. They got better players. And not to mention, Jaden Daniels in the next 2 to 3 years is going to have that CJ Stroud effect where people in free agency are going to go want to play with him. So keep that in mind. Save this clip for later. Jaden Daniels is going to be a magnet for talent going to Washington. So I liked what I saw. I was really excited about it. And then you can move on to J.J. McCarthy. J.J. McCarthy made some mistakes here and there, but he also did some things at such a high level. He extended plays. He got through his progressions. He was able to maneuver in the pocket while keeping his eyes downfield and then maneuver through the pocket and get out of there when he needed to. He had really, really good decision-making. He was great on third downs from what I saw. A lot of the things that we saw in a bubble in college because he played at Michigan and had a lot of help around him, didn't have a lot of pressure on him for most of the time. We were able to see it come to life in that game. And he was taking shots downfield. He was accurate downfield. Like, yeah, he made some mistakes here and there. But for J.J. McCarthy, that should be really exciting for the Vikings fan base because you know you have something there. Now give him time to learn and develop and not be tossed into this in a year that it's not going to look too good for Vikings fans. Like, it should not. It just is what it is. Let Sam Darnold go throughout the year, do his thing, probably throw for 4,000 yards, maybe win some games, maybe lose some games, miss the playoffs. That's probably what's going to happen. Groom J.J. McCarthy in the background because he does have some upside. And I'm excited to see it because that was some really good preseason tape. I liked it. Now let's move on to Bo Nix. Bo Nix was as advertised. Holy shit. Bo Nix played better in that Broncos system than any quarterback I've seen in that system in the last year. It looked different. It looked exciting. He was accurate. He got the ball out of his hands so quick. It was insane. But it shouldn't come as a shock because he did that shit in college at Oregon time and time and time again. And now it translated into week one of preseason. And again, we're not going to crown people in preseason, but he is decisive. He's smart. He's athletic. They can do designed runs. He can scramble to pass. He can scramble to run and get the first down on third downs. He was like, if you replaced his body movement with Russell Wilson's, Bo Nix looked so quick twitch and decisive and like he knew everything he was going to do. Where if you look at what Russell Wilson did last year in that offense, it almost was that like everything was in slow motion for Russell Wilson in a bad way. Bo Nix was lightning in a bottle for them, got the ball out quick. He looked like an athletic, more athletic Drew Brees in a sense with how quick he got the ball out. I'm sure Sean Payton loved it. Drew Brees was athletic back in the day. I will say that. Now, last but not least, this has caused so much controversy over the course of the last few months for my takes on Drake May. The Patriots made a massive mistake, and I will die on this hill. They took Drake May with the 3rd overall pick, and he will not move that needle for that franchise like Marvin Harrison Jr. could have, while you also could have had Joe Milton late in the draft. That is just a fact. You cannot tell me after watching one preseason game, and again, this is not a detriment on Drake May. I think Drake May can still play football. Like, I'm not just saying he sucked. I'm saying Drake May was not worth the 3rd overall pick for the Patriots organization. And he probably will never have been worth a 3rd overall pick. And every year, teams draft a quarterback too high when they don't really need that piece yet because the rest of their team sucks. And then you look at the film between Drake May and Joe Milton, you're like, wait, which one of you was the 3rd overall pick? Because one of you looked like it and one of you didn't. And that's not to say that Drake May was just completely terrible. That is to say that Drake May did not look like a first-round draft pick. He didn't look like a top-5 pick. He didn't look like the number 3 overall pick. And I'm sorry, if you're going to use the opportunity cost of taking someone in the top 5, they better be a surefire home run, or you're leaving money on the table for a generational receiver, a generational pass rush guy. You are leaving that on the table. And that is why you cannot take guys like that, in my opinion, in the top 5. Joe Milton, everybody rips on him from what he did in college, this and that and the other. Dude, you know how many people just aren't good college quarterbacks for whatever reason? Maybe they're not as prepared offensively as you might think that they are. Maybe they don't have checkdowns to their running backs. Maybe they have full slide protections and they're not having a slide side and a man side so that an athletic guy can't escape through the pocket. You don't know what's going on in these college organizations, but the NFL coaches do because they watch the film. And a guy like Joe Milton, who I actually liked a lot pre-draft, didn't know where he was going to end up, but I knew that if he got into a situation where he didn't have to be a superhero, he could go make some plays. I just don't understand. I don't understand how this all happened, but with where we are today, you cannot tell me that Monday morning in the quarterback room, when they're watching everybody in the room is watching the film together, that one person's not feeling a little uncomfortable and one person's not feeling really hopeful. That's all I'm going to say. I know I talked a lot for a couple minutes there, but we saw a lot, and it all unfolded really fast.
We saw a lot. We're going to see more. And I want to give you a chance to rehash your quarterback rankings that you had right before the draft earlier this year. So you had 3 tiers. Your first tier was organization changers, where you put Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams. In tier 2, you had different skill sets, but experienced with J.J. McCarthy, Michael Penix Jr., Bo Nix. Penix we did not talk about, but you can have the chance here. Tier 3, big frame, lots of unknown, a tier made just for Drake May, and we know how you feel about him. Any upgrades or updates you'd like to make to that tiering system or the categorization or where guys are?
Yeah, so I think tier 1, you have Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels still. I think the tier 2 needs to be described a little bit differently now. So again, it was different skill sets, experience. I think tier 2 now is hopeful organizational future, however you want to put that. These are guys that I believe will be the future of these organizations for the next 3 to 5 years, if not longer than that. And I'm sorry to say, it is all 3 of those guys still. I would rank them differently, though. I would rank Bo Nix and Penix Jr. equal, and I'd put J.J. McCarthy under both of them. So my rankings as of right now, I'd probably put Caleb Williams in 1, because we didn't see a whole lot from Jaden Daniels. He only played like a series, I think. We'll go Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels in tier 1. Tier 2, we're going to put Michael Penix Jr., Bo Nix, J.J. McCarthy. Tier 3, I mean, as of today, I would have Milton over Drake May.
Oh my god!
Truthfully, but I don't think either of those guys are going to be the future in New England. Like, sure. Maybe, I don't know. The thing is, this is going to be the situation where Drake May gets his shot because he was a 3rd overall pick. Milton's never going to beat out Drake May unless somebody says they don't give an F about how much money they paid Drake May. That's how the NFL works. It does. No matter what Joe Milton does this preseason, no matter what Drake May does, whether it's good, bad, indifferent, terrible, Drake May is going to have that spot over Milton because those guys in the organization can't be wrong. That's how the NFL works. I will say, like, between Penix Jr. and Bo Nix, I would really love to see what Penix Jr. can do with that first offense in Atlanta, because I know Kirk Cousins is going to be the guy this year, but man, dude, watching the film of Penix, it's like push the ball downfield, process, quick delivery. He did all the things well that we just love about Kirk Cousins. He did all those things well, and he's a rookie and he had control of the offense. But then there's this extra layer of athleticism and creating plays and super deep field accuracy. Like Penix Jr. is probably the most accurate deep ball passer that I've seen coming out of college in a while. There's guys that throw the ball 40, you know, 38 yards, 42 yards down the field really well. He throws that ball 45, 50 yards down the field extremely well. And that's like a different throw than just throwing a go ball down the sideline. These are the posts. These are the over top posts, the super deep crosses, the high corners. Like these are different throws and offenses that not all quarterbacks like to throw or are willing to throw. Like pylon routes. So a pylon route is basically a seam in corner from a wide spot. Like it's kind of like that route you see in Madden where they are super deep for 20 yards and then go back to the front pylon. It's a super deep corner. There are not many quarterbacks in the league that like throwing those throws because it has to be so accurate at 50 plus yards. Penix Jr.'s got that in his bag. And there are not a lot of guys that do. And I'm seeing that offense. I'm seeing those weapons. And I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, I think their ceiling is going to be higher once he takes over rather than Kirk Cousins. But I do think Kirk Cousins will get them to the playoffs. I think Kirk Cousins will help them win the division. It's just time's ticking, man.
Yeah. Yeah. You had a Trey Lance opinion out of nowhere. Obviously, he was getting some preseason looks. Yeah. Going on that.
Trey Lance. Dude, Trey Lance. So how about I saw Trey Lance with nobody out there on the field with him that I knew for sure being decisive, ripping the ball, making plays, scrambling, maneuvering the pocket, like taking off for 20-yard runs where he looked faster than everyone on the field. People forget that Trey Lance was a first-round pick. People forget that he only played a handful of games in his college career. People forget he only played a handful of games in the NFL, and then Brock Purdy came on the scene. Trey Lance can play football. Trey Lance is also younger than some of the guys on this list. So Trey Lance is a really unique situation, and he could play football for the next 10 years of his life, next 15 years, and he still wouldn't be 40 years old. Like, think about it that way. Right? So Trey Lance could play six more years in the NFL and just be turning 30. He's a really unique situation. He came in really young. He has had very little experience and he has a really cool skill set. If Trey Lance were coming out in the NFL draft next year, he'd be a number one overall pick and he would not be that much older than the guys that came out this year or next. Like, you know what I mean? It's Trey Lance is unique. Trey Lance, maybe he's a late bloomer in the NFL, but I saw things out of him that I'm like, damn, if you put him in the same situation Dak Prescott's in, throwing a CeeDee Lamb, having that defense, Trey Lance can win you games for sure. So Trey Lance, stash him in fantasy because you're one ankle away, you're one whatever away from him being a quarterback that I think has high upside and can go get you the rushing yards that you love in fantasy, can go get you a lot of completions. They slung the ball around. They threw the ball 40 times, I believe. And it was bang, 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 scramble. Like, yeah, he missed some throws here and there. He had maybe a little bit of rust, but dude hasn't played a real football game since his ankle, I believe. So, Trey Lance, don't forget about him. We're talking about him.
I want to give you a chance to defend another take you had on Twitter. This one caused a bit more controversy. And apparently, there's some history here that I didn't know about. So, you said that there's a chance that the Saints are going to be the worst team in the NFL this year. And I'll give you credit because you later replied and couched it with the fact that you forgot about the Patriots. So maybe it'll be a race to the bottom for the two of them. But
yeah,
it drew a lot of ire online from mostly Saints fans, I assume. Go ahead and defend why you think you might be right.
Yeah, dude, I'm going to be very honest here. I have not liked the Saints for a long time. Dating back to my days in 2019, 2020, when I was injured on IR, and I had Saints fans coming at me when I was with the Falcons because I was tweeting about the games. I love supporting my team on Sundays, even though I was on IR, bed rest, whatever. And, you know, I had some fans come back in the day and say, yeah, that's why you're on the couch. And then that same season, the Saints were playoff hopefuls, I believe. And I put a tweet out there that they can come join me on the couch and watch the rest of the playoffs together. And that's kind of where it all started. But I also think Saints fans, there's some really nice Saints fans out there. There are. And I like the ones that are nice. They are delusional for the most part. Like, I don't know if it's some New Orleans magic going on. I don't know what it is. I don't know if they're sipping the juice. But from an outsider's perspective, Saints fans seem to be the only ones that believe their team is a Super Bowl team. Like, year in and year out. As if Sean Payton and Drew Brees are 10 years younger, still doing the damn thing. You can't squint hard enough and watch Derek Carr play football and think that he's Drew Brees. And that's okay. Not everybody's going to be that guy, but we need to stop pretending that guys are those guys, because he's just not. He's in, I don't know, year 10, 11, 12. I don't even know what it is, but he's still making mistakes that I'm like kind of looking at when I watch these games, and I'm like, dang, man, like, you have all the arm talent, you have this and that, but it just has not ever come together. And I don't know if it's him. I don't know if it's the team. I don't know if it's the receivers. I don't know, but I just don't ever believe it's going to come together for the Saints in this way, shape, and form that they exist today. And then you pull up their schedule and we can talk about it. Let's look up Saints schedule 2024. I'm looking at their schedule, dude, and I'm like, I'm hard pressed to find five games that I think that they're going to win this year. They play the Panthers week one at home. You should win that game, but man, you might lose that game. Panthers defense is good. Bryce Young's only going to get better. And a good defense versus a Saints offense who turns the ball over all the time, that's a recipe for disaster. Then you have the Cowboys away. You're going to lose that. Then you play the Eagles at home. You're going to lose that. Then you play the Falcons away. You're going to lose that. Then you play the Chiefs away. You're going to lose that. You're probably going to start the season 1-4, most likely. Then you play the Bucks. The Bucks are better than you. You're probably going to lose that. That'll be a toss-up, 40% chance of winning. But for all intents and purposes, we're going to say you're going to lose that game. That's 1-5, and that doesn't feel good. Then you have the Broncos. You might beat the Broncos, but I also think Bo Nix is going to be better than your quarterback. So let's just take quarterbacks and head coaches. And if you think that Sean Payton's not going to go back to New Orleans with some shit up his sleeve and just ragdoll you, look, I don't even like Sean Payton, but I don't think Sean Payton's going to lose that game. Now we're looking at what? 1-7? 1-6. Then you go to LA after getting your ass beat again, and that's an away game, and the Chargers will have a healthy Herbert most likely by then. That doesn't look fun. That looks like 1-7. And then you have just went 1-7, and you're tired, and you're like, shit, this sucks. We hate it here. And then you go to the Panthers, and then you get probably punched in the mouth to go 1-8. And then you're like, God, I can't even breathe. Now we got the Falcons at home and they're rolling. They're going to go to the playoffs. That looks like 1-9. Like I can just see this unplaying in this fashion. And again, the Saints have a good defense, but I don't think they have what it takes on offense. And I don't think they have the guys leading the way to go and do anything this year. So that's like 1-10. Then you got the Browns. The Browns defense probably going to ragdoll you. And Deshaun Watson's going to be better this year. Going to lose that. Then you have the Rams. Rams aren't going to lose to you. Then you have the Giants. This is where things get tricky. Which Danny Dimes is going to show up? I don't know. And I don't care, because the Giants defense was top five last year. And I still think that you're going to be miserable and have nothing to play for at that point in the year. And I think you're going to lose to the Giants. Then you have the Commanders. I think the Commanders are going to be better. I think the Commanders are better than you today. You're going to lose that game. Then you have the Packers. Good God, you're going to lose that game. Then you have the Raiders, and then you have the last game of the season, and you're playing against the Bucks. And look, I only found one win on this entire schedule, and I know that I'm super, super heavily swayed in that direction. You'll probably find three more in that, like, I don't know, stumbled upon some gold. I think you'll end up winning four games this year. But I look at each game, and I think you should probably lose all of these except for one of them. That just is what it is, dude. Like, I don't see any way, shape, or form that they think they're going to win nine games. I couldn't peel my eyes back wide enough to find nine wins on this schedule. And they online believe they're going to win 12 games. And I'm like, there's just such a large discrepancy between reality, my reality, and Saints fans' reality that, look, like, if I'm like, I actually think the Saints probably win five or six games this year.
Sure.
But I would not be shocked in the slightest if they suck ass and lose almost all their games.
I'm going to be the voice of the people for a second, because somebody replied with what was the most cogent response. They laid their points out most clearly. I'll read you the 5 points. None of them seem super compelling to me, but I'll read you the 5 points. The first is that their Vegas over-under is 7.5. So saying
Vegas is wrong all the time.
Right, right. Saying hammer that they're the at under. Least not going to be the worst team in their division. It seems like you're hammering the under here. Yes.
Not going to be the worst in their division. The Panthers just got a coherent coach. And the Panthers defense, let's see Panthers defense last year. Holy shit, you don't say. Top five defense in 2023. You don't fucking say. So you have a top five defense in 2023, and the Panthers had the worst offense in the NFL last year. defense is going to probably be somewhere around there. The offense, they just got an offensive head coach who actually did a hell of a job with Tampa Bay and led them to the playoffs for the first time. Ex-Tom Brady. Led them to the playoffs when they shouldn't have. They weren't really a playoff team, in my opinion. But their coach was good. Offensive coordinator was good. The Panthers' offense is going to be better. Panthers' defense probably going to be similar. Like, they have good players on defense. So, let's just do some quick math here. It doesn't look good for the Saints. It just doesn't. I'm not sipping on any of that, dude. Like, I'm just not. Like, let's just go, like, team by team. If you just look, a wise man once told me, if you don't know anything about a game, look at the quarterback and the head coach. Okay? If you just bet solely off of the quarterback and the head coach combo, you're probably going to win most of your games, most of your bets or whatever. I like Bryce Young better than I like Derek Carr. And I'm not like a Bryce Young truther, but I like Bryce Young and their new head coach. I like Bryce Young and Dave Canales better than I like Derek Carr and the Saints head coach.
Dennis Allen.
Yeah. I don't want to be like so negative about him, but I'm not a Dennis Allen fan, okay? Like, I don't want to, like, I'm just not. Dennis Allen, I'm not going to go in there.
Okay. I'm not going to go there.
What has looked good? None of it. None of it, brother. None of it has looked good in a long time, is all I'll say. So give me Bryce Young and Canales over Derek Carr and Dennis Allen. That's what I'll say. Then give me Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield balled out last year. Give me Kirk Cousins. Like, you know, like, if you just start playing this game, Saints, it's not looking good, brother. It's okay. Tank. Tank and get that number one overall pick. Get your new quarterback. Get your new head coach. Go start this cycle all over again, because that's where you're heading.
Yeah. I just want to round out the last 3 points this guy made. One of which was, there's a weak division. It's never a great sign of your confidence in your team when you're talking about how bad the rest of the division is. And we've known how bad the NFC South has been for a long time. And they just keep, the NFC South has been bad, worse than it is this year. I would say the NFC South is probably ascending in terms of how it's been the last 5 years.
They are.
And the Saints still haven't made any splash when the NFC South was bad. And now they have Kirk Cousins.
The Saints have only gotten worse roster wise, year over year over year over year.
Yeah.
Like,
the weak division point doesn't seem like a very good point, because the division is the least weak it's been in years, presumably.
Yeah. It's not like, dude, look at the AFC South. It's a weak division. Bro, the Texans are real.
Yeah.
The Jaguars, if they stop tripping over themselves, can be decent. Like, it's the Colts somehow find a way to win 7-8 games every year. And they, like, have weird upsets every year. And then the Titans were the best team in the AFC a couple years ago. Like, it's just weird, right? Like,
yeah.
The NFC South being a weak division is just a really weird thing to say, especially knowing the landscape of the rest of the NFL. It's just how many, like, the Bucs beat how many teams that were not in the NFC South last year? The right. Falcons are going to beat a lot of teams that are not in the NFC South this year. The divisions, like, it's just, that's just so stupid. You have to strap it up on Sundays, regardless of what division you're coming from.
Yeah, this isn't like college where you're like hanging conference championship, division championship.
Yeah, like,
banners.
Dude, this is not SEC, ACC bullshit, dude. It's all the NFL.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. All right, let's get off the Saints, because I kind of agree with you. They're probably going to be a really boring team this year, and I don't want to think about them much more than we already have. I do want to fire through some injury news and just get your quick take, maybe with a little bit of a fancy angle on all of them.
Yeah.
Jahmyr Gibbs hamstring. It looks like he avoided a more serious ACL injury, but it's still going to be a hammy that sidelines him for a couple weeks. JJ McCarthy had some knee soreness. Malik Nabers apparently has some sort of ankle sprain. Reports suggest that Malik Nabers has a low ankle sprain, so maybe about a week.
That's good news.
On the sideline. Good news. Friend of the program, Hollywood Brown, looked to have some sort of nasty sternum situation. Something that apparently Tyreek Hill also dealt with in 2019. And the first 5 weeks, he was a little slow coming back, averaged less than 100 yards per game in the first 5 weeks of 2019 after that same injury. So Hollywood's supposed to come back in the next couple of weeks, but fantasy implications might say he might come back a little slower.
That hurts.
You had some really sad Rondale Moore news. He's out for the season, unfortunately. And then CMC dealing with a bit of a calf strain. So maybe some touchiness around picking him 1-1, although he still seems like he's going to be the consensus there. Any one of these worry you more than others?
Yeah, so the Hollywood Brown one is definitely worrisome, especially with how big of a year I expected him to have. I would push him down. Like, you can't afford to have a top guy in fantasy miss any games, especially early in the year. That one concerns me. I drop him down a little bit, but once he's back, like, if you can get him later than where he's expected to go, that's a steal. He will be a stud once he's healthy. The Christian McCaffrey one does worry me, and I was a teammate of his. It doesn't necessarily worry me in the fact that, like, I don't think he's going to have a great year, but it does concern me in the fact that when you're talking fantasy football, they're going to be saving him for the playoffs, right? Like, he might not have the same year he had last year where they have to run everything through him to get to the playoffs. I would just be really cognizant of drafting him as high as he's expected to go, given the fact that they're trying to do this thing for the long run. Look at Travis Kelce last year. Travis Kelce, regular season wise, he was conserved all the way through and popped off in the playoffs. I would not be shocked to see, as Christian McCaffrey is getting older, them use him for when they need him. But if they don't necessarily need him, to let the other younger guys get some work. Take it for what it's worth. Does that not mean that he might have 15, 18, 20 touchdowns this year? He probably will. But I'd expect his yard total, his touches, everything in that, right, to go down. He has his touchdown record. He has had that crazy year last year. It's okay to have a down year. It's not going to be a bad year for Christian McCaffrey. It just might not be worth picking him over a Tyreek Hill, who the Dolphins need him to win games. That division is going to be crazy. Like, just that is my fantasy advice. I would not take Christian McCaffrey number one overall. Leave it okay at that.
Might be a hot take. I mean, I am lucky, I feel like, that I'm not in the number one overall pick spot in any of my leagues.
I think it's the worst pick.
Yeah, because you feel like you have to take him, but as you're taking him, it doesn't feel like a good pick at all. It's like, no, you kind of get joked on if you don't take him, but if you do take him, you feel like you have all that downside that you just described.
Yep, totally.
All right, Hassan Reddick is helping fill the news cycle because this is one of the weirdest stories of the offseason. So to give people a timeline, he's, of course, requested a trade now from the Jets without ever suiting up for them. He's only stepped foot in the facility to do his press conference, which ironically was on April Fool's earlier this year, and to sign his contract. Wow. That was the only time he was in the facility. He's now been assessed something like $1.7 million in fines for missing all of training camp, which is over 3 weeks at this point. The reason for the holdout was because when he got traded from the Eagles for a conditional third round pick, which means it could be a second round pick. I don't know what the escalators are, but it could be up to a second round pick. He's on the last year of a deal that he signed a couple of years ago. He's set to make something like $14.5 million a year. He thinks that he needs to make something closer to what Danielle Hunter just signed with the Texans. They've had the same sacks the last 2 years. Danielle Hunter signed a two-year $49 million contract, so $24.5 million per year. So he's looking for essentially a $10 million raise. Apparently, the Jets thought that them acquiring him in a trade meant that he was going to play out this last year of his contract before they had to come to renegotiate. Obviously, the Hassan Reddick camp thought they were going to renegotiate before he started playing with them. That's all resulted in him not coming to practice and invariably requesting a trade. Not a great look for either side, but I'm curious what you make of this whole situation.
This reminds me of Za'Darius Smith a little bit. You remember that with the Packers?
Yeah.
Like, I know the contract situations and all that's a little weird, but it was like, hey, like, why are you not just like showing up to play, right? Like, and I bet they've offered him something that he does not want or isn't happy with. But at the same time, like, did he get traded without his destination like known in the offseason? I guess that's a key point that I need to know. Because if he asked to go to the Jets, that's one thing. If he did not ask to go to the Jets, that's another thing, which I think that's an important key to this. Sure. But this is a weird situation, man. Like, guys deserve to be paid what they're worth. But I also think that if he's just asking for money based on sacks, that's a lame ass argument, in my opinion. Sacks are not the end all be all. Like, I watch Hunter play and I'm like, that dude's got a motor. That dude pretty solid in the run game. Like, I don't know enough about Reddick's, I guess, presence on defense to be able to say what he's worth. However, there's a lot more to getting paid than just the same amount of sacks as someone that has gotten paid. And knowing what Philly's defense looked like last year, And the fact that they were so willing to trade him, I don't know, some red flags. That's all I'm going to say. Yeah. I don't know the guy.
Yeah, it seems like, to your point of wondering if he was, you know, could decide where he was getting traded, it seemed like he went to Philly asking for a re-up on his contract. He's 29 years old. Philadelphia didn't want to pay him what he was asking, which, again, seems like it's in the neighborhood of $24, $25 million a year. And so they started shopping him around. It's not like they traded him to the Panthers. I mean, they traded him to the Jets, who are going to be competitive this year. It was a really good match because the Jets needed some pass rush help after losing their sack leader last year, Bryce Huff, to the Eagles in free agency. So it was actually kind of like this unofficial swap that they did between two pass rushers. So it seemed like it was all going to work out. And now he's just, you know, wanting his big contract because he didn't want to play the last year of his deal. It's tricky. And like you said, it's hard to know without knowing the guy, but the second trade request in 6 months doesn't probably sit well with the teams that you're on. And the other thing, I'll add from the Jets standpoint, this is from Andrew Brandt, who was a former exec for the Packers. He notes that last year the Jets traded a first round swap and 2 second round picks for a player that nobody wanted to trade for and was never going to play for the Packers again. That was Aaron Rodgers, of course. And I always found that weird that Aaron came out on Pat McAfee and said, I want to be a New York Jet. And that's while he was still under contract with the Packers, which you would think stripped the Packers of all of their leverage. Like,
yeah,
how, like, the Jets don't have to give anything because this guy's already said he doesn't want to play for you. And he said he wants to come here. So I was always impressed with what Gutekunst was able to get for Rodgers, given the fact that it seemed like they have no leverage. So the Jets give up those picks last year, and now they give up a third round pick, which could be a second pick, for a guy that might literally never put on pads for them. Like, they might have to end up trading him. And at that point, they probably cannot salvage more than, I don't know, a fifth or a sixth round pick. So it's like, they're just giving up draft capital. For the Jets, I'll say they better hope it works out for them in this next year or two while they have Rodgers, or else this could be an organizational reset that puts you back quite a few years.
Yeah, and it's unique because, like, their defense is so good, right? Like, the Jets have young talent. Like, they have young talent at 3 key positions: running back, receiver, and DB. And then they have a core of guys that's also really good. They also have a window right now that's like, this is a really specific window. And if they do not hit in this window, they have to hope that they can nail a few more draft picks and a few more this, a few more that, to have the window extended. And if not, shit's not good. So it's, again, we're going to find out a lot about the Jets this year. And I also think the Jets will win their division this year. I don't think that they need all the pieces to win their division. I think they have what they need in the building. I think they probably feel the same way, but that does not mean that they don't need things to go their way too. They need to be injury safe. They need to be, have some things go their way like any other team in the NFL. And it's just, it's wild, man. Like, if I'm Hassan Reddick, which I don't know him at all, I would be looking at this roster and be like, dang, man, I could add to this and really we could go on a run. But I don't know. Yeah. Maybe he just wants his money.
Yeah, just wants his money. All right, last thing I want to close out on here. ESPN Bet tweeted out their leading MVP bet. So I'm going to give you the odds, but the order I'm going to give them to you in is based on the money and or the tickets that are being submitted for these players for MVP. Number one, CJ Stroud at plus 850. Number two, Joe Burrow at plus 900. Number three, Josh Allen at plus 850. Four, Jay Love at plus 1400. Number five, Patrick Mahomes at plus 500. And number six, Dak at plus 2000. So again, that's an order of how people are betting on them. Obviously not their odds. You know, Mahomes has the best odds at plus 500, but he's fifth most bet on. Mm-hmm. Anybody aside from Stroud and Love getting your money this year, Kurt?
I think you got to play into some of the popularity contest in all of this, I think, as the year unfolds. I'm really excited to see what Josh Allen does, because Josh Allen has that unicorn factor where, hey, his team may not be great, but if he can elevate them, he's going to have an MVP case because of who he is. So Josh Allen intrigues me at plus 850. Joe Burrow intrigues me at plus 900, obviously, because people love Joe Burrow. The public loves Joe Burrow. I'm going to stay away from Mahomes because Mahomes at plus 500 is probably a good solid place to put your money. But I also think that the Chiefs are more likely to win a Super Bowl. And I don't think that the MVP typically coincides with who's going to the Super Bowl. So
yeah,
a lot of that has to do with the background of how do they play? What's their defense like? Like, I don't think it's going to be necessarily like a 50 touchdown year for Mahomes. don't think it's going to need to be because they're going to be ahead in games. I would not touch Dak with a 10-foot pole. And honestly, if you put $100 on Stroud, Burrow, Josh Allen, and Love, and one of those four hit, you're going to make money because the odds are all over plus 800. I would like to see where Lamar's is, but I feel like no matter what, if Lamar has the same season that he did last year, I think people are going to be weary about giving him the MVP just because it didn't, you know what I mean? Like, I think there's like some shadow behind that a little bit. So
yeah,
I like Stroud, Burrow, Allen, and Love to take some money. And if you sprinkle a little bit everywhere and one of those four hits, you're going to make money.
I feel like this award is less about knowing football and more about knowing psychology because there's total voter fatigue. Like I wouldn't bet on Lamar for those reasons. I wouldn't bet on Patrick Mahomes for those reasons because I think the fans and the voters just get a little, you know, like there's the argument that in the NBA, at least, that LeBron could win MVP. He could have won MVP for 15 straight years because by the definition of the most valuable player, he was undoubtedly the most valuable player on his team. But like you saw with Jokic, you know, winning it 3 years in a row, and next year it's probably going to go to somebody else because people just don't like giving the same award to the same person, regardless of this. Patrick Mahomes is probably the most, arguably the most valuable player. So I think you have to kind of pinpoint the guy whose stock you think is rising. And I think you kind of nailed it with the Joe Burrow and Josh Allen picks, in my opinion. Those seem like guys that are going to get a little popularity bump this year.
They are. Like they got to, right? Like that's how I'm looking at it anyways.
All right. I like it. The last thing I want to plug here, Kurt, before we say sayonara, you're going to be doing a Packer All 22 breakdown this year after every Packer game, which I am so excited for. What can we expect from that? Because I think that's going to be a hit of a series.
Yeah, I'm excited. So did a little poll on Twitter and it was overwhelmingly, yes, please do that. So what I'm going to do is as soon as I get access to the All 22, which happens typically 24 hours or so after the game is closed, I will go in and I will watch every offensive play and every defensive play. And I will break it down from an offensive perspective. So Packers on offense, I'm going to talk about what we're looking at, how the play design is, where I think the reads might be, kind of what the defense might be doing. And again, I don't know the play calls. I don't know any of that, but I have enough to at least hopefully, you know, tie in the loose ends a little bit. And then when we go to the defensive side, I'll be speaking from the perspective of the opposing offense of, look, they're doing this, this, this. This is how the defense is set. Is where they're weak, whatever. And we'll just go through a full game and talk about game flow, situational football, mindset, thought process, all of it, and try to just give a little bit more of a deeper dive into what this Packers season will look like. And again, I'm excited this year. Like, I think this year they have the team to do it, to win the division. It's about time to do it. So I'm excited to get down to that. We're going to be doing it on this YouTube, obviously, every single week, all year long. And that can be something you guys can expect from this channel.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. And I think there's a world where, you know, the Packers are on a bye week, obviously. We could take some fan suggestions for, and I need you to take a look at my team. Because I think it'll be telling. You know, obviously you don't, as a fan, get to see all that sort of breakdown as the game is going on. And to come with I think the 24-hour waiting period is probably just good to, whether it's a big win or a big loss, you get to emotionally reset and then come to it and have more of a level head about it.
Sweet. Yeah, I'm excited, man. It's going to be good. And we'll start with the Packers, go from there. But for this year, Packers fans, you can expect that breakdown every single week. And then we'll see if it starts growing in high demand for other teams, then we can grow it out. But obviously, we got a lot of ball to talk about all week long. So we'll be very busy.
Can't wait. We'll be back next Friday with another episode. Make sure to like and subscribe in the meantime. And we'll see you guys next week.
See ya.